Welcome to the best damn podcast ever. My name is Blake Buck, and co-hosting with me this week, we've got William Matrix Mouth Miller.
How you doing there, Blake Buck?
And we've also got Justin Flamin' Face Vic.
How you doing, gentlemen?
I think we should return to the classic monikers. Matrix Mouth and Flaming Face. I'll be Butter Brains. Anyway, we've got a lot of news for you guys, and we're just going to jump right into it. This is your best damn podcast ever for Wednesday, March... How could I have forgotten in that, like, one... Hey, you know, they don't edit this out. Neither of them... They want me to look stupid so bad. And this is your best damn podcast ever for Wednesday, April 6, 2011. What do we got on tap for this week?
So, first up, there's a rumor that Mortal Kombat might be roping off its online modes. So, this is the latest in the trend of publishers sort of trying to cash in on their used game sales. So, the rumor has it that the new Mortal Kombat game will ship with a one-time use code that grants access to all of its online modes, and if you pick up the game used, you gotta pay 800 Microsoft points to play online.
Woo! Dude, these things are so steep. I mean, I could see five... I mean, like, some games are doing 15 nowadays. I mean, like... I mean, I guess if you want to recoup that money, but...
Yeah, they're kind of not... They're not fucking around. I mean, it's... I mean, on the one hand, like, I hate used games, and on the other hand, it's... I don't know, it's like you get a game and you're expected to get all the functionality that goes along with that game with it.
Right. Well, you know, you gotta make back your money somehow. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how I feel about all this yet.
So, what... Have you guys seen this new Mortal Kombat tape? What are your thoughts on it?
I played the demo. It's pretty damn good, actually.
Now, the real thing you gotta watch out for in these Mortal Kombat tapes is if I do a fatality on Blake Buck, is he gonna explode... in a conflagration of femurs and rib cages?
Oh, God, yeah. Like, they went so over the top and so creative with their fatalities. It makes me kind of giddy, actually.
They drew some criticism last time because they had Marvel versus Mortal Kombat, right? Or DC versus Mortal Kombat. One of those. Comic something. Anyway, they toned down the fatalities because they didn't want to have, like, Superman getting his head blown off and all that stuff. So it's good to see a return to form. And this looks like, I know it's a different developer, but at the same time, you know, it wasn't rocket science, Mortal Kombat.
No, but this time they kind of worked a little rocket science into it. Like, it's actually a good fighting game now.
I'll be the judge. Then again, I'm so done with fighting games, dude. Like, what was the last fighting game? Oh, then again, you like fighting games, right, Joseph?
I enjoy them. I'm not good at them by any means, but I enjoy them. I play them online.
I think that's the problem. I just suck at them. Like, what?
I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, it's, for instance, Street Fighter 4, Super Street Fighter 4, it's one of those games where you play it, and it's really meant to get you as good as possible at that game, but I'll go play that game online. I'm pretty much reserved to getting my fucking ass raped for the next 2 hours as long as I'm playing it. Like, I can't win. But it's, you know, it's like I could feel myself getting better at it, sort of. Right. And it's one of those games that, I don't know, it's like, it's, the point of it is to really perfect your technique, whereas, you know, it's a refreshing change from a shooter where it's just like, you know, shoot guys down this hallway until you win, and you can't really lose. You know, like, it's a different type of game.
It's just like, I don't have time to devote all these hours to playing, you know, to get in the perfect combo string. I mean, what do you think, William Miller? I mean, do you play these games? The fighting games much?
I don't. I'm not. I'm just like you guys. I'm not really good at them. I think that there's a niche audience for these. Or actually, not really a niche audience. It's a big audience. But to me, these games are kind of like they're bad game design because it's secret hand.
How so?
Hang on now. Hang on. I mean, if it's in the genre, that's fine. If it's a fighting game, that's it. But when the fighting game mechanics start creeping into other genres, that's when I get a little uncomfortable.
Like what? What are you playing?
Hang on. The problem, the thing that bothers me about these games is the the handshake mechanic, the secret handshake mechanic. Mm. To play these games, you got to know the secret handshakes, right?
Right. And that's what Mortal Kombat originally was built on. Like,
exactly,
if you,
exactly.
I mean, there are moves. I'm sure there are even moves that were never even discovered in that game. There were so many little cheats and tricks you had to learn.
And that was cool. But now it's like, it's such a barrier to entry for these kinds of things because of the handshake effect. So, I don't know. I just don't like to invest that kind of time to like, perfect my handshake in these games. So when you see things like, I was playing the Castlevania tape, right? There are a ton of handshakes in that game, I don't know. And, like, they're not real complicated, but Wee Miller's dumb. He's not going to be able to figure that shit out.
Yeah, but on the other hand, it's like, would you rather have a handshake, or would you just rather have 20 different buttons, each button doing a different thing? You know, there's a balancing act that has to happen there.
I'm not into fighting games. I guess there are people out there I want, like, a hardcore fighting game fan to come and explain the nuance of you know, this latest iteration of games to us, because I feel like an old man sitting there, you know, back in my day.
You know, well, I mean, it really is about, like, I mean, it's all kinds of things. It's, I don't know, like, it's probably as closest to Kung Fu as I can picture a video game getting. I mean, it really is about predicting your opponent's moves, about getting, you know, pixel perfect, just precision and frame perfect timing. And, you know, it's the skill that it requires from you is very, very high.
Right.
And I think that's what attracts people to this genre. And I mean, you know, talking about bad game design, I think these fighting games actually have probably some of the best game design I've ever seen, just because the level of play that it promotes is so high. I mean, people play this for money and for tournaments, and, you know, like, there's worldwide Street Fighter 4 tournaments. It's absurd.
The games are really deep. But the design of those games is extremely insular. It's right. Like, you know, they've been, I don't want to say the genre stagnated, because it hasn't. Like, it's seen a lot of innovation.
And I would say even lately, really, you could argue that it stagnated maybe 2 or 3 years ago, but there have been a lot of, like, really big fighting games come out recently.
I agree. But it's like I said, it's really insular. It's kind of like the shooter genre, right? The shooter genre, you shoot things. In the fighting game genre, you handshake. And if you're not good at the handshake, you're not going to be good at the fighting game. Same as with shooters.
And just to bridge this gap onto another story, Marvel vs. Capcom 3, which came out, what, I guess about a month ago, ships 2 million copies. After an 11-year hiatus, Capcom's crossover fighting franchise returned last month with Marvel vs. Capcom, blah, 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 blah. Fate of Two Worlds. That's the subtitle. Fate of Two Worlds. So it shipped 2 million copies in the first, I guess, is that the whole month? Yeah, I think it's the whole month. And it did not ship as many copies as Street Fighter 4 did in its first month, but it did ship more copies than Super Street Fighter 4 when that came out, I guess that game came out about 8 months a year ago. That was kind of like the deluxe version of Street Fighter 4 that came out.
Right.
Yeah. So
really? Still, that long ago? Damn.
2 million copies is a lot. I mean,
that is a lot.
That is a lot of games.
Yeah, that is gangbusters. That's what that is.
Man, I love the whole concept of Marvel versus Cap. It's like, let's take two things people like and we're gonna make them fight.
Well, I mean,
staple of the fighting game genre.
I mean, it's especially when you talk about like the X-Men or something. It all comes down to who'd win a fight between, you know, Wolverine and Mega Man. You know, right. it's like these conversations happen all the time, and that game is the answer.
Eighth grade Blake is like crazy excited when he heard about that. Oh man, X-Men and Capcom. You know, I really liked Marvel versus Capcom 2, but at the same time, you know, I think that I liked it because to me it was a casual fighting game. That's how I played it. That's how I played it with my friends. You just picked it up, you clicked the sticks, and that was it. You know, there wasn't much to it. And again, I think my problem with the fighting genre now is that, like, because of the online play, because of YouTube videos, because of all this, there is no kind of casual level play anymore. The entire experience is kind of catered to that high level of play.
Oh,
right?
I agree with you.
I guess that's what people want. But in pursuing that, I think they make it less, you know. Think about, what's the game? Got, you know, Nintendo characters in it. Smash Brothers. I think that game succeeded largely because while it was nuanced, the basic controls, the basic moves, it was all very simple, right? There wasn't any 80-button combo to do something. It was all basic moves that you sort of moved your character around and did. In fact, it was really almost more of a platformer because all the characters had basically the same moves. They just did different things. That's what I kind of liked about the original Marvel vs. Capcom is like, you know, you kind of knew the fireball. You knew the, you know, the Ken backwards kick. You can figure out most of the moves for most of the characters. And I feel like we've lost that in the fighting genre. Then again, maybe we haven't. I hadn't played this new Marvel vs. Capcom tape.
Yeah, I mean, from what I gather, I've only played it like 3 or 4 times, but it's, you know, it's pretty much the same concept. You just mash buttons and wiggle your sticks and awesome shit happens. And, right. and stuff blows up. I mean, there are juggle combos and stuff on, you know, they're popping up on YouTube and such, but it is much more in that Smash Brothers direction where you can just probably just mash shit and you'll do pretty good.
Well, good.
The other thing that it does along with Smash Brothers is Smash Brothers kind of has that built-in handicap. So like, you know, person A beats person B, but you know, person A was probably weaker now and gets hit farther because his percentage is higher and such like that. So,
yeah, I think that Nintendo really found some sort of like sweet spot with, because it's really not a fighting game, but it kind of is in Smash Brothers. You know,
yeah,
it's more closer to like a platformer.
It's like a platformer beat 'em up party game almost.
Yeah. Anyway, so. What are your thoughts? I mean, sure, I want to hear from somebody who's like a hardcore expert on this stuff. Send us an email, feedback@bestdamnpodcastever.com.
I should bring our lead combat designer on the show, Joe Cordera. He's a tournament level Tekken player.
Oh my god.
And like we have like 4 or 5 of these guys that are our combat designers at Big Huge that are just like ridiculous fighting game players. They play every day. They, you know, they got the like, I heard you guys talking about the arcade cabinet you were building, Justin Vick, and you know the sticks you bought. Yeah, they got that. All
nice.
You know the sticks with the LEDs and all that. Yeah, they got that. Yeah, but man, they get super super into it. And the thing that gets me is like, there's this whole vocabulary, there's a whole language used to describe the characteristics of or the mechanisms of a fighting game. You know, buffer frames and juggling,
canceling, and all that stuff.
Canceling and all that stuff. And they, you know, they can assess. You know, they get like the new Guilty Gears or whatever. They play for 5 minutes and they can like break it down in those terms instantly. You know, it's crazy.
Not for me. All right, I'll stick with my Smash Brothers and my, you know, my clicking my stick. So that's about as far as it goes.
Yeah, the thing is, even the tournament level Smash Brothers players will go down to, you know, like what moves cancel into others and, you know, all that crazy esoteric shit. I mean, it's, you know, people really drill down into these games.
All right, well, Wayne Miller, what you got for us?
All right, Blake gave me all the dumb news today. So first news I got, Kojima. He's been promoted. He's now vice president of Konami Digital Entertainment. I don't really know what that means. I mean,
vice president of what?
Yeah, I think the whole company. He's vice president of the entirety of Konami.
That's
Digital
really
Entertainment.
Weird. That's really strange to me. I don't get it. I mean, he's a designer. Like,
well, he's not anymore.
I would even call him an eccentric game designer. I mean, he doesn't seem like somebody you want at the helm of a multi, you know, million-dollar company.
I think that's why he's vice maybe president. I think Kojima is like a kind of a figurehead.
Yeah, he's a good figurehead to have.
I think he has like really, really high level oversight over these projects, but he's not a boots on the ground designer anymore.
Was he really ever? I mean, how active was he even in the last like 2 Metal Gears? You know,
I don't think very much. There's no way we can know. But I think he really was for a while, like the first Metal Gear. What was the one he did, the Police Quest game before that he did for 3DO or God knows what? I think he was a you know, real active in the trenches kind of guy for a while, and now, you know, he's just sort of a figurehead. But I thought,
well, you know, I mean, he said it himself, there's no time for love on the battlefield, okay?
War has changed. But to me, this is weird because in my head, like, he's already king. And this is like saying we promoted the king, something less than a king. I don't really know. This article just strikes me as strange because he's not already just like king of Konami.
I think, like I said, it's probably more of a, you know, a marketing to investors sort of approach rather than an actual power position.
Sure. All right, next in my queue of shit news.
Dude, you can get your own news. I swear to God. Yeah, I like how if Blake does anything, it becomes whatever that thing is with the word shit in front of it. I'm going to go make some breakfast. No, I'm going to go make shit breakfast. Excuse me.
So, a new God of War rumored on the way. There have been some LinkedIn postings about, you know, people working on it or people having a God of War screenshot on their resume or something. I mean, this thing happens. This is not news to me because we already know that they're going to do another one.
Well, sure, but I mean, it's worth, if there are details out there, it's worth, you know, mentioning. Are there any, what were the positions or anything? What are some of the...
Programmer. Animator. Like, what, I mean, what...
I'm sure sometimes they give out little details, and for instance, well, I'll save my story, but I have a story where in a job listing, some details leaked out about the game that were not known. Get to that in a minute, but you're saying that this was just kind of a generic thing without any...
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, there's some LinkedIn profiles that had some suggestive stuff on there. There's some, you know, hiring stuff on their website that sort of suggests that they're working on a new one. I mean, there's not really any details.
Hmm. All right, well, I'll segue from that to talk about our other leaked game info. Grand Theft Auto V, potentially, some details have come out, including that it's going to be on the West Coast and feature characters from San Andreas. So a voiceover casting call on the Actors Pages website has found a new project called Rush. Ooh, maybe that means San Francisco. Oh, wouldn't that be sweet? Oh my God, please. Please tell me they bought Midway. But it's going to have, let's see, it does have one of the roles for this is James Pedaston, who is apparently a one of the radio station voices in San Andreas. So potentially, if they're voicing the game, I mean, look, William Miller, you can extrapolate information. If they're voicing the game, it's probably in a getting it to like a 70% done place, right?
And you can say that's about right, yeah.
And you can also extrapolate that, well, it's probably going to be in on the West Coast, possibly in San Francisco. And, I mean, I'm just saying you can learn things from these. I mean, even though they're scant details, I mean, I'm pretty sure that this is probably spot on info.
Oh, no doubt you can learn stuff from job postings and little slip-ups like this. I'm just saying that the God of War 4 one, A, it's a no-brainer, and B, there's really no new information. That's why I was angry at you for giving me.
I swear to God. You know what? Next time you ask me for news, you know what you're going to get? Shit! Anyway, what do you guys think about this, though? The new Grand Theft Auto? How do they outdo them? If, let's say you're on the design team for Grand Theft Auto 5. What do you do? How do you one up what you've done in the past?
Well, things, I don't think they've been one upping themselves. Like, honestly, I played Vice City a lot more than I played San Andreas, a lot more than I played 4.
Hmm.
I mean, they've kind of been going the opposite direction for me. If they really want to one up themselves, they need to sort of go back to their roots, if you ask me.
I don't know. I think a lot of people say that Vice City was the best. I still think San Andreas, dude, just the scope of that game. Unbelievable. No game has ever had the huge scope that game had. I mean, it's probably one of the longest, certainly the longest Grand Theft Auto game ever made, hands down, in terms of like just the main quest and then all the other side things. Mm-hmm. I think that the thing that I think that they really fumbled up with in 4 is that the plot is so bad. It's so cliched. So, oh, mafioso, what you doing, motherfucker? It's so lame and cliche and stupid. And hopefully, I guess all these games kind of have cliched plots. I mean, you had 3, which was, you know, basically the same thing as 4. I mean, mafioso New York crime world. Then you had Vice City, which was just Scarface. And then you had San Andreas, which was more or less like, I don't know, there was some boys in the hood element to it with the gang wars and stuff, but then, I don't know, I guess that one's a little more abstract than the other two, but...
Yeah, well, I think my complaints with the games were just each subsequent game made you do more tedious, inane shit. Like, for instance, yeah. I really enjoyed the story in San Andreas. Like, I thought the characters were really cool, and, you know, I really liked the scope of it. But then I found myself going to the gym every 30 minutes. And then Grand Theft Auto, and also just to level up my, you know, level up my guns, like, there's that, you had to shoot them. And I'm like, okay, well, this means I'm shooting a hubcap for the next 3 hours to level up my pistols. And then Grand Theft Auto 4, I had to go fucking play pool with all my buddies to raise my love meters with them or whatever. Yeah. It's like,
well,
like, do I really need to do all this stupid shit?
I mean, I would say there have been really innovative ideas in all the games. Maybe not all of them worked, but they have tried. I mean, what would you do? I don't know. I guess it's impossible to speculate, but...
I'd make it more like Crackdown.
Yeah, Crackdown,
I would just make another Crackdown.
No, that's I think that they should focus on plot, because I think that that's what almost made all those games. Like, well, not that they were shit, but like,
dude, are you kidding me?
What?
That's not why people play those games.
Yeah, it's like, I don't really give a shit about Niko Bellic and his redemption from the life of crime or something. No, it's like, I play these games because I want to dress in purple robes like a pimp and go beat people with dildos while I go run people over in a taxi cab that's paying to look like a scrotum. I don't know. It's like these sandbox games let me do whatever the fuck I want, and that's what I like about them.
But the series has been moving in a more cinematic direction in the past iterations, as opposed to
it has.
Like games like Saints Row, which are more the silly clown variety of the sandbox shooter. So I don't know. I guess we'll see more details as they come out and let you guys know about them. Justin Fick, what you got for us?
All right, so this is going back to our good friends Nintendo. Nintendo is building a new R&D headquarters. And it is in Kyoto, and it is going to be it is a $144 million facility that will be its new research hub. It will employ 1,500 people. So it is reinvesting in some R&D, which I think is a really good move. Actually, like I've been saying, you know, the last couple episodes that the only way Nintendo is going to survive the next generation or two is to come out with something totally new and totally awesome. Like,
now, Justific, is this hardware R&D or is it software R&D?
Asking me these hard questions before I read this article.
is it more like R&D 1 back in the day? First of all, whatever happened to R&D 1? It's like at some point they just started choking on their own Pokemans and quit making games that were any good. Like Metroid and you know.
I'm not even familiar with this. What is this?
R&D 1 was Nintendo's software research division back in the day, and they made all of the classic games. I mean, like, after the first Mario, they made all the classic games.
Yeah, this doesn't mention software or hardware specifically.
Nintendo's just like, look, we have enough franchises now. We never have to make another new game. We're good. Bye,
well,
y'all.
Well, they kind of do, actually. I mean, Zelda's sort of flatlined for me.
For you, but forget, for the majority of the gaming populace, all of Nintendo's IPs are very strong.
Yeah, we've I know with Zelda, at least, I'm not alone. And, you know, Metroid needs some sort of reboot. I mean, really, like, the only consistently strong thing they have going for them is Mario. And even that, like, Galaxy 2 is just Galaxy over again.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they kind of need to... you know, do something both with the hardware and the software sides.
So last night was trivia night, and we go play trivia at the local bar.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to meet Nikki there. I drove from work. And so she shows up, and out of her purse, she pulls a 3DS that she has purchased for me.
Oh, shit.
She got herself one, the teal one. I got the black one.
Uh-oh. All right. And so what? Do you have a judgment for us yet, Wayne Miller?
Well, man, I don't know. Like, I might have said this before on the podcast, but my first reaction to this device is to, like, throw it on the ground and burn it with fire because I don't understand it. It's like witchcraft. I mean, like, the 3D stuff, it works. It's 3D in my eyeball.
Okay.
And I don't understand that. I'm a little terrified of it. I have to play it at like half intensity because I'm an old man, and I like my mind just tries to reject what it's seeing. But it's pretty cool. I tried, like, the little AR cards. Those are pretty neat.
What's an AR card? What is that, huh?
You know, it comes with these little cards.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've seen that. That's right. We're a little 3D.
You put the card on the ground, yeah. And yeah, you point your 3DS at it, and it, like, character pops out. And it takes, like, 3D pictures, and it's pretty cool. I haven't done a prolonged play session with it yet. I just played around with it a little bit last night. But it's pretty slick. Now, I'll have an official judgment for you probably next week, but...
All right, well...
Preliminary results are good.
Well, apparently you're not the only one. I'll move on to our next story. 3DS sets sales record in U.S. with no widespread issues for the portable. So, Nintendo did not announce the official numbers, saying that they're going to hold those back till their NPD numbers on April 14th. But they said that the U.S. day one sales numbers of the 3DS were the highest of any Nintendo handheld system in our history, which is a little surprising because it has the word handheld in there.
U.S. Yeah, is that now, is that revenue or is that units?
It says U.S. This is from Nintendo. U.S. day one sales numbers for 3D for the 3DS were the highest of any Nintendo handheld system in our history, meaning that it has not eclipsed consoles, which would probably indicate the Wii. So. Yeah, yeah. Maybe they're not as strong as they might have hoped for, and that's why they're holding back the numbers, but certainly probably still pretty good.
That means it would have eclipsed, you know, like the DS Lite, which had a very strong launch.
That's true. So, let's see. Does it say in Japan it shipped 375,000 units in the first 48 hours? So, we can probably, if it eclipsed that, it's definitely probably... I would probably peg it around like 750,000 units here in the U.S. If I had to pick a number, but I'm sure we'll find out come a week and a half from now. So
I mean that's kind of surprising. I mean I'm glad it's doing good. I didn't think it would, honestly. I mean because the launch lineup is a little weak, but I would love a reason to play my DS again.
It also says here it's priced at $250, but the raw materials cost of the 3DS is only around $101. So Nintendo, you know, a lot of times, you know, remember when the PlayStation came out, you know, a lot of, you traditionally sell them at a loss. Nintendo's making profit day one off these little doodads.
Well, I mean, you got to factor in R&D time. Oh, well, and all sure. That stuff too.
But I mean, compare that comparatively to like a PlayStation or Xbox. They're making
they have R&D costs and they're losing money per unit.
Right. So, sound like gangbusters. We'll let you know more as we find out. Wee Miller, you got any more news?
Yeah, I had one more little story. Xbox or Microsoft has announced that the Xbox storage media is getting a little more space, 1 gigabyte of space to be exact. So, as we know, Xbox uses a DVD, mm-hmm. right? Dual layer DVD as its storage medium, unlike the PlayStation 3, which uses a Blu-ray. But apparently only about 6.5 gigs of that DVD can be used for the actual game media. Now a dual layer DVD holds about 8 or 7.5 or something like that. Apparently like a gig or something was set aside for DRM and DVD video, whatever the hell that means. So they're saying, well, we don't have any use for this DVD video sector. So we're just going to throw that out and allow the Xbox to read that extra gig of space.
Surely doesn't mean it's not going to be able to read DVDs anymore, though.
Oh no. Okay. This is just like if you author an Xbox disc, you have to save a gig in a certain sector. Right now, under the to pass cert, you have to save a gig for what they're calling DVD video storage, which they don't use ever. And so they're doing away with that, and they're opening it up for the whole storage medium to be used. Now, I don't know how this is going to affect most games. I mean, maybe your cinematics in Final Fantasy 13 would have been a little better, like compression.
Yeah, that's true. There were some
like
people that complained about that. But, I don't know. A gig is, in this day and age, a gig is really not that much space. I mean, I guess it is. I guess when you're used to working with 8 gigs, having 9 over 8 gigs is a pretty big improvement.
Well, if you're going from like 6 to 7, you're looking at like a 15-20% increase in space.
Right.
Sure, and one thing we do to speed up load times and stuff is we actually duplicate data when we cook the data for to put it on the disk. We'll actually duplicate data in certain sectors so that it loads faster. So there's not a lot of seek time, and the more space you have, the more of that data duplication you can do to optimize seek time. So it could speed up load times in games a little bit if the space was used like that. I could see that happening. Data like, you know, animation data or voiceover data, that kind of thing, can get a little more room. But still, it doesn't come close to a Blu-ray, so you know, you're not going to get that kind of storage. But
ugh. Sorry, I had to take a drink. Y'all were talking computer mumbo jumbo. I don't know about that. All right, well, we got any other news? I think it's time for releases. You guys got releases pulled up?
Yep.
All right, William Miller, I'm going to teach you how to get to the releases page. All right, here we go. Everybody play along at home. You go to GameSpot.com. I'm going to do it with you. I'm going to do it real time with you.
GameSpot, I'm there.
All right,
GameSpot.
Now see on the right where it says latest headlines, it says see more on the right there. It's latest headlines in gray. It says see more on the right. Okay, so you see Gears of War 3. That's the biggest thing on the page.
Got it. I see Gears of War 3.
Okay, now to the right of that, there's a white box with a gray thing. It says latest headlines.
Oh, I got you. I see.
You click see more right by that. Now, okay. This is where we pull all the news from, William. We've been pulling news from here. It's not rocket science, buddy. Then on the left, if you look to the left, see it says system update, and you scroll down, it says rumor control. You scroll down, it says release calendar. And you scroll down a little more, it says next week. And then you click that box where it says see all releases underneath the heading of next week, because you don't want to do the current week, and it should have a Shadow Complex as the first thing.
All right, first up this week, we got Shadow Harvest.
like he knows how to do this, like he's a duck in water.
For Windows. Head to the conflict areas around the globe in this tactical action game set in...
Dude, this has the most retarded name ever. This is like someone chose four awesome words. Shadow Harvest Phantom Ops.
And they only chose three, because Ops is obligatory.
Yeah. Put Crystal in there, too.
You're required by federal law if your game has guns to put Ops at the end of the title.
If it's a tactical anything, it's got to have Ops. All right, we got Adam's Venture 2, Solomon's Secret. And it just says adventure game. I don't know anything about this
tape. Oh, boy.
I don't even know what it's coming out for. Y'all are going to fend for yourselves. And we got Horde for the Mac.
What is it?
Didn't you do a trailer for this?
No, that was Hordes of Orcs. Not the same thing. And it is an arcade action score attack game in which you play as a dragon intent on ransacking a medieval kingdom. Dishwasher, The Vampire Smile, coming out next week for XBLA. I guess this is the follow-up to that indie-turned X-Blah hit Dishwasher, yeah. Right? Did you either of you guys play much of that? I played a little of it, but...
Yeah, I played a little of it, too. Like, it was...
Explain what that is. I hadn't played it before.
It was like a platformer kind of... Just think you can probably...
It's sort of like it's a side-view beat-em-up. It has a very Flash game vibe to it, but you play like this... This samurai dishwasher, and there's just agents, and there's just different ways to chain attacks, and it's very visceral and very satisfying to do hits like that. The game had that in spades, but I also found it, I don't know, like a little tedious. I don't know. I was kind of iffy on the title.
Right. All right. Well, I guess that's coming out next week. And also we got Anomaly Warzone Earth coming out for the Mac. Fight against alien war machines in the world. Oh, God, man. Glenn Pickens.
There's a lot of Mac-only releases this week.
I know, right?
Well, dude, Tunzer Dennis is going to be a pig in shit with his upcoming Mac game sales.
I've never heard that for a pig in shit.
Really? Never heard pig in shit before?
I've never heard that.
I figured that would have been a southern term with all your pigs. Yeah,
maybe people are just embarrassed to tell me that, because that's what I look like most of the time. Just fit, you want to take the rest of these?
I'll go with these quick. These look like garbage. So we have Carnival Games, Monkey See, Monkey Do for the Xbox 360 Kinect. We have a game called 100 Classic Games. 100 Classic Games, a follow-up to Classic Games. Like, these are awful. So Star Drone, we have coming out, is players pilot their drones across a galaxy, collecting pieces of Equilibrix in order to restore the equilibrium of the universe and stop the evil Genoids from taking over.
Bad week in gaming.
Yeah.
Lord, nothing. Man, usually we got at least one thing to get excited about.
How about Remington Super Slam Hunting Alaska?
Whoa.
Oh, now like, can you hunt, you can Super Slam Hunt.
I think I'm going to stick to Shadow Harvest, Phantom Ops, Crystal Heart, Tactics Ogre.
In Remington Super Slam Hunting Alaska, players can hunt moose with basketballs.
All right, well, I guess it's time for judgment. All right, now, I guess we didn't think about this. Has anybody got a judgment? I guess we, well, you, got, you don't
I can,
quite
I
have
can, I can do a judgment of sword and sorcery.
Oh, that's right. Is
ooh,
that
do
a,
that.
Ooh, can
yeah,
I,
yeah.
Can I get that on my iPhone yet?
Not yet. Like, maybe damn in a month it or so.
All right, well, Jess Vic, what we got?
So, I'm gonna give you a judgment of Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery EP for the iPad. So this just came out maybe in the last week or so, and probably within a day of its release, it got iPad Game of the Week from Apple. It's this good. So it is a collaboration of Super Brothers, who do a lot of like online sort of music videos. Jim Guthrie, who is sort of like an indie rock musician, and Cappy Games, who did Critter Crunch for the PS3 and for XBLA. So this game is I'll just say it right off the bat. This game is fucking perfect in every way that a game can be perfect.
Whoa, ultimate cynic here. Are you kidding me? Come on, it can't be perfect.
I shit you not.
It is really, really good.
So this game is, I guess, I've heard it described as a number of ways. So it's very, very saturated with this style and mythology that is just, I mean, it's got its own little it's got its own little personality, and it's very cool. So you play.
First of all, what kind of game is this? Is it a platformer? Is it a role playing game?
This I don't really is sort of a combination of two different types of games. So normally the way you play it is sort of a point and click adventure almost. So okay. you can walk your character around and collect items and use items and cast spells. And at any point in the game, you can go into fight mode. And by to do that, you rotate your iPad into portrait mode, and the game sort of zooms in and goes into this dramatic cut, and your character pulls her sword out, and it goes into like this punch out style battle.
All right.
So it's really cool. The art style is pure Super Brothers. It's pixel art. It's very detailed pixel art, and the characters have this very cool minimalistic style to them, and just the way they're drawn, the way they're pixel, like the animation is so fluid, and they have a lot of personality with the way they move and walk and dance and whatever they do. The sound is mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing?
Mind-blowing.
Out of that little tiny speaker. Mind-blowing.
This is a game. Yeah, this is a game that I actually unplugged my laptop and plugged the speakers into my iPad just so I can have it blow my face off when I play. It's that good. The music is very choreographed to the action that's happening around you. There are music cues as you're walking down certain paths, certain music will play. It's very tied into the gameplay. The sound design is just it's so immersive and so, I don't know, just so well done. Like you see so many games that kind of gloss over sound or just throw some sounds in because, you know, you can check off sounds. But, like, this game really, really goes into detail of every little ambient noise that a game can make. So it's, I don't know, just like the whole game is a delight to play.
What is the basic premise or plot? I mean, you're a swordsman. You go around, you collect fairies, pieces. Oh wait, what did you say? Pieces of Earthshire to restore the universe. What was that for?
So the story actually is very archetypical. There's you're a character called the Scythian, and you just appear. Sort of Metroid style. And you come in and you do shit. Like your first woeful errand, as the game calls it, is to retrieve a book called the Megatomb. And that's sort of the first goal of the game, and then there are, obviously consequences with that. I don't want to give much away at all, just because it's so wonderful. I mean,
does it have like a fully fledged? Is it sort of like tongue in cheek? Because when you say things like Megatome and Scyther, I'm thinking it's sort of like a tongue in cheek sort of homage to these.
A little bit. It's very. However, this it's very serious in its presentation, but it's also very tongue in cheek with its writing. So if you know, for instance, the dialogue and the narration is very, it's very colloquial. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it will, like, for instance, there's a part, the part that really won me over was along a path you can go investigate some graves, and it gives you a narration. It says like, along the beaten path we found some graves of fallen warriors, and we wondered what was up with that.
it's anachronistic. There are a lot of anachronisms in the game.
I don't know. You seem so determined to like this game before it even came out. Now you're just gushing over it. I'm still being skeptical. All right. I mean, I don't know. It sounds like a little bit contrived, a little pretentious from the way you're describing it, Justin Fick.
Oh, does it?
It does. It does. You can't have it both ways. You can't be both artsy and classy and tongue in cheek at the same time. You can't.
No, I mean, I think this one succeeds at that very well. Like, the art style is very not tongue in cheek. It is, you know, you could look at any scene from this game and it looks deadly serious. And then you can take any line of dialogue. For instance, if you were to look at the sorcery tweets that people are posting, those are actually lines from the game. And you would look at that and you would say those are actually very tongue in cheek.
I guess so I'd have to see.
It kind of does a little bit.
I mean, I've only seen like a short video of this. I'd have to play it to really wrap my head around this, because it sounds suspect. But Justin Fick, I trust your word.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only thing one could complain about is that the story is very archetypical, but I think it's supposed to be. I think the tagline even calls it an archetypical adventure game. I think it's more the way this is told and just the way it filters this, you know, the mythology behind it that's original and new.
If you look at the point and click adventure genre, that's usually the strongest suit of those games is the story. They don't tell archetypical stories; they tell interesting, different stories. I mean,
yeah, but the point of this game is more of an audiovisual, like, interactive experience.
I do not. Oh, fucking please. Oh, I hate it. It's like, oh, it has to be experienced. It's of sexual revolutions, the 60s. You want to try LSD? Come on, dude. Come on. I mean,
the kind of thing that I felt when I played this game is analogous to what I felt when I played Myst for the first time. And I know that's like, you know, I don't know. That statement has probably been used a lot for a lot of different things, but that's the kind of feeling you get. You're sort of enveloped in an audio sensory kind of thing. You know, you get into this zone and you're playing it, and it's not about the story. It's about putting you in this place and keeping you there as long as possible. And it does a really good job.
It's very engrossing.
At the same time, Myst and its endless sequels do have powerful stories. So they have dialogue, characters, they have plot points. I mean,
The first one didn't have shit.
Yeah.
Well, it had implied story. I mean, that's all the pages.
Like, that's what this has. It has a very bare bones narrative, but a lot of implied depth. And it's the same thing as the original Myst. Like, very, very simple in terms of its plot points, in terms of the plot itself, but the narrative is a lot deeper because of the audio and visual cues you're getting while you play.
Right.
I mean, it does things as simple as, you know, for instance, you know, there's a scene in a pathway with a statue, and there's really nothing special about it. Like, you know, nothing even happens with the statue, but there's a different musical cue that, you know, just from the fact that it's played at this moment and has, you know, the music has this quality, it sort of makes that statue something else. Like they're very good at giving meaning to these things that may or may not end up becoming part of the game.
You know, I'm going to have to play this game either to be blown away and totally agree with you, or say that you're full of shit, Justin Fick, because it could go either way right now.
I mean, I will give you my Justin Fick disclaimer. I am a big champion of indie games, and this game is this game is indie to its core. So I mean, I will give you that disclaimer. But I mean, if that's the kind of thing you go for, if you go for the games that are made for the sake of being played, that really have a story to tell, and they have, you know, and it's all about the feeling behind that. This is the game for you.
And I think it's smart to put this out on the iPad, because that seems like, let's just say it's analogous to Myst, which may or not be true, but it seems like a game like Myst, a game that kind of goes for that. I mean, because it's not, I mean, maybe it's different for this game, but Myst is not really a game that is marketed to gamers. Not really, right? At the time, it was marketed to just people who owned CD-ROMs, because that was the new new hot shit, right? And it sold tons of Dennis gangbusters, because like they were able to bring in sort of a wider audience. And maybe it's smart to put it out on iPad, because they see that, you know, there's a, I don't know, but the iPad over, you know, I don't know, like the DS, in terms of like, you know, who you're going after.
Mm. Well, I mean, it went for the iPad also for the control scheme. The game is very made for the iPad. I don't think this game could work anywhere else. There's a lot of rotating.
But it
the
is
iPad.
Coming out on the
There's
phone, a, right?
Yes, it's coming out on iPhone.
Okay.
Maybe in the next month or so. But yeah, there's a lot of rotating the iPad. There's a lot of multi-touch, rubbing, that kind of thing. So, I mean, God. It's... But
are we in feedback already? Like, how did that happen?
No, the rubbing is from how much I actually love this game.
Oh God. All right. So thumbs up then?
Yeah, thumbs way up.
All right. Well, let's see. How long have we been rolling for? Where is my time at? 48 minutes. Do we got any ideas for discussion, or we want to just head into feedback? Because we do have a decent amount of that.
Let's feedback it up.
Wee Miller, are you alive? What are you doing right now?
I'm looking at this Super Brothers. Like, I want to play this God. Right now.
Well, you can't. You're supposed to be doing the show, idiot. All right, where is my feedback now? All right, it's time for feedback. It seems like all of our emails are just like pictures of dicks and shit now. There's very little text anymore.
I think we just got to make our own language, sort of similar to Braille, where a certain pattern of dots represents a letter. We just need to have like certain positions of dicks represent certain letters of the alphabet.
All right, so our first email comes from Pseudo Sushi, and it's just a link to the forums. So, Wee Miller, why don't you describe what is on this page?
All right. So, the forum pictures go like this. We've got how Blake sees himself. And there are only two sort of archetypical Blake Buck photographs. There's face.jpg, which we all know, the pan-dimensional horror that it is. And there's... And then there's Blake Smart, which is this very fine picture of young Buck with a tweed jacket slung over his shoulder and his hair combed, and he doesn't look so inebriated.
But
and so he's got
but this one has a lens flare on the tooth.
It's a large lens flare over his tooth. So this is how you see yourself, apparently. And then, of course, how the internet sees you is the infamous face.jpg. And then right below that, real life Blake is two large pads of butter being melted in a frying pan. And finally,
yeah, we really don't need to describe the rest. They're just dicks and butter. That's basically just dicks and butter. You know, if you want to see insulting pictures of me, just go on the forums. Don't send us emails about it.
Last one, we've got how the Monglers see Blake. You have in the background the Sugar Shack, where Blake reportedly lives. A penis with arms drawn on it, one arm holding a picture of a young lady with large breasts, and then a stacks of butter where I guess logs should be, you know, outside the Sugar Shack.
You know, I'm just very creative. I just stay away from the forums these days. Nothing but mean people on there. Nobody is my friend.
Okay, so our next email comes from Super Derp. He says, you think that egg babies is crazy shit. Down here in Australia, we had to take care of baby ducks for this experiment. Now, I may live in backwards fucked up country, but that's just plain bullshit. You see, unlike egg, you could kill ducks. Some people accidentally did. Egg babies are for boys. Ducks are for men because you can kill them like a man. Despite what you say in the forums, Blake Smart, Super Derp.
That's
so
right.
I guess he had to take care of a live animal for... Did you guys talk about the egg babies in the last podcast?
Apparently, egg babies are a real thing, and I have just never heard of them. Were you familiar with egg babies, William Miller?
I'm familiar with egg babies. I have not done it myself, but have seen it in popular culture before.
See, you forget Blake Buck's not exposed to the outside world. I mean, I wake up, cook my butter up, pour it on myself, and wallow in self-pity. That's basically my whole day.
This is not... I mean, I don't think this happens in the South too much. It's just assumed that you know how to take care of chillin'.
No, we just... God takes care of our children for us in the South.
I kind of want to try this with baby ducks now. It seems like the opportunities for this to end in tears are just astounding. So Pete B sent a link with the caption "Game Break Dbad License." Let's see what's going on here. So according to Eurogamer, game staff were quote. Now this is game as in a I think this is a studio called Game.
Okay.
Or a magazine or something, we're told to, quote, buy Nintendo 3DS consoles and games from supermarket rival Tesco last Thursday night and then sell them in store as pre-owned.
No, the game must be like a GameSpot kind of thing or a GameStop.
It must be a retailer. So the website says an internal memo that was presumably leaked out by an employee. Quote, whilst we were unable to competitively match this offer in terms of a mint price, says the memo, it offers a great opportunity to gain 3DS consoles and games for your store's pre-owned stock.
That's a good idea.
Well, I will admit that when we when Justin Fick worked for a place called Cosmo Games in LA, this is when I was at UCLA. This was when the PS2, the GameCube, the Xbox One were all coming out. And we were told to do exactly that. Like, we went to Best Buy across the street, bought up all their shit, and then just brought it back to the store, and we sold them in 3-game bundles. You could not buy the console by itself from us. So we would go buy them all for, you know, regular price, and then we'd sell them with 3 games.
Wow. Well, I mean, I guess if capitalism, if you can, why not, right?
It's also very much breaking the DBAD license. Like, we were fucking, right. I mean, it's sketch and it's douchey.
All right, William Miller here. I got one more email for you. This one's from TK.
All right.
Here, it's this and then a link. Again, a lot of these emails aren't making sense these days. They're just... And Justin Fick, I'll post the link to you. This could be a virus or something. I don't even know what this is.
Okay, so Blake Buck just sent me TK's email, which was submitted to BDP Answers, and it looks like it's entirely in Swedish. I'm not going to attempt to read it. And there's a link to howdoidoo.wma.
Hey BDP, this is a question for BDP Answers. The first one is Fick, how do I become as handsome as you? Miller, how do I become as smart as you? And Blake, how do I become as rich as you?
I don't think any of us can answer these questions. These are just eternals. We will never know.
Also, Blake, why do I get Rhapsody ads from your email? I added a picture in the email so you can see.
Oh, yeah, dude. I got one of those the other day.
Yeah, I sent you that.
You asshole.
I'm not an asshole.
Some fucking virus or something?
I didn't send you. No, then look, I thought I'm a fan of Rhapsody, and they're like, hey, do you want to send your friends like 3 months of Rhapsody for free? And I sent you guys email. Look, I'm getting shit on for sending you free shit.
I don't understand Rhapsody. Blake Buck, explain this to me. Maybe then I'll
try.
I've been using GrooveShark. It's exactly like Rhapsody, except free.
I don't know. I've never heard of no Groove Shark.
Yeah, go to grooveshark.com, and it's everything that Rhapsody's got for free. Mm. Why would I use Rhapsody?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'll have to check
Explain
out.
Explain that to
I
me.
I like Rhapsody over iTunes or anything else, because it's like, oh, they have everything, and you just pay like one fee, and you have every song ever done. Anyway, why are we talking about Rhapsody? I don't... Let's keep going with the.
I think we've found our secret monetization plans.
Yeah, it's
in podcast Rhapsody ads. Time to start monetizing this shit.
Speaking of which, just an aside, I've got Google Analytics running on all the sites now, and all the feeds will be running through FeedBurner by the end of the week, so we'll be able to track numbers and downloads and all that shit. Because we lost that when we started doing the show again, we moved hosting.
You don't know what that means.
Son! You got master of the webs over here, son. Just call me Spider-Man. I sling the webs. Let's see, is there any more of this voicemail?
I don't know if it's a spoof, but it says your email.
Shut up. I do one nice thing. Never doing anything nice for anybody ever. All right, we got one more email, and I saved this one because this one's special. Just Fig, do you remember who we talked about last week? Doris Butterina.
Ah, yes.
Well, guess what?
Is
Doris
she back?
Doris Butterina is back, and she's mad. Because we didn't think she was real. We were called Photoshop on those breasts last week. Well, guess what? We got our email. Just got it today, just like an hour before the show. Blake Buck, this is from DDDDDDD Doris. Blake Buck, my heart is breaking. I give you my ample breasticles, and you shot me down calling Photoshop. I hope this photo rectifies that. Forever yours, DDDDD Doris. Team Blake, rich, smart, and manly. Well, now I'm listening.
Flattery Doris gets you everywhere.
All right.
It pains me to have you mistrust me, Blake Buck.
Now, there's breasts on the screen, and then... Right above it, written on a handwritten note on the card, says, "It pains me to mistrust you. It pains me to have you mistrust me, Blake Buck." Signed, DDDDDD Doris. You know. So let me tell you guys a secret.
Blake Buck, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned.
No woman has ever listened to this show ever. Now, I did a little cyber sleuthing. All right, gentlemen. That's right. Blake, spider webmaster's man, did a little web hacking around. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to go do a little investigation. Because I was like, there's no way that a girl with large breasts listens to this show. Okay? So I go on the forums. I look
Why?
The
there's
forums.
Plenty of men with large breasts that listen to this show.
And also, I was thinking to myself, okay, even if this is real... You know, somebody had to have put this person up to it, right? There's no, and I was thinking, that can't be the case either, because none of our listeners have ever even seen breasts. Even less than me, somehow. Go on the forums, and I look up, looks like Doris has posted something on the forums. And so, you know, I got all sorts of admin privileges in the forums. And guess what? Doris's account shares an IP address with another member of our forums. Who do you think it is? Who do you think it is? Who do you think it is?
Justin Fig.
maybe I won't even say who it is. Maybe I'll leave that a mystery. Or you can. Why don't you edit this out, Gregory? Because I want it to. I want to get Doris. I want to get her good. But it's. So I got my suspect eye on you, Doris. All right.
Now, Blake, were you sleuthing around trying to see if Doris was real or not, or were you sleuthing around looking for like a phone number?
Oh, please be there a phone number in the forums.
or like a Facebook link or something.
I'm just shocked that like because clearly in my head it's like one of our listeners did this as a joke, but I can't even believe one of our listeners has ever had sex or seen anything sexy. Or even talked to a woman ever. Anyway, so let's move on to voicemails. Thank you for the email, DDD Doris. Here we go. Here's our voicemails for today.
Yeah, it's TK here again. Yeah, you know how we get drunk and such and so. Okay.
I like how our listeners just insult other listeners when they call in now.
It's probably freaking the...
Wait. I gotta go back.
Okay, so it's not TK, but holy shit, he is probably freaking the fuck out now. Going like, what the fuck? I'm drunk. I remember leaving this message. Peace. Heat.
All right. Well, thank you, whoever.
Do we have TK impersonators now?
Yeah. This is Anthony from Alabama again. Anthony Alex from Angry Mailman podcast.
Nice plug.
I got a couple points. Number one, Justin Fick. I am aware of that whole egg in school scenario. Of course, when I was going to school in Alabama, they used to do that stuff, give by little eggs from various creatures and put the eyes on them, all that kind of stuff, and make you take care of them. After I graduated, they did move up into these little devil-possessed-looking stuffed animal babies that had, like, computers inside of them that pretty much can judge if you were abusing them or not.
So, oh, shit, yeah, you're not alone.
Wait, what? Wait, they had computer chips that tell
you? Yeah, like, they actually had, like, stuffed animals and, like, dolls and shit that have chips, like, accelerometer or something to tell if you shook them or kicked them or whatever.
Oh, that's funny.
So they can tell if you beat the shit out of your kid.
That is legit. And the second thing, I do have an advice question to ask BDPE.
Uh-oh.
I need to know if... you know, in like Fable 2 and Dragon Age 2, you know, there's a lot of these achievements that just are kind of hanging out there for anybody to get if they'll just kind of put their morals aside. And I just wanted to know, is it gay that I made sure I hooked up with that gay elf in Dragon Age 1 to get achievement points? This has really been bothering me. I'm kind of upset about it. And I'd like for you to put my mind at ease or you know, let me know what's up. Oh, man. I appreciate it, guys.
So I guess the question is going after homosexual role-playing achievement points wrong in Dragon Age 1? Justin Fick, go.
I know. I mean the question of making a straight man going after a gay achievement. I don't know. I think that's actually saying something about you.
Look, that just shows you're a true gamer.
That maybe you didn't realize there, Anthony from Alabama. maybe this is helping you find a little more about yourself as a person.
Right, just get out there.
What we're finding out about Anthony from Alabama is that he likes GamerScore a lot.
Yes.
A lot more than his own sexuality.
Well, it's like, picture this. Say Anthony from Alabama. If I told you that I was going to give you $5 to go have a sexual relationship with William Miller, now compare
you
that
me
to
out for $5.
Yeah.
Justin, what's
that?
Come on, $10.
$7.50.
Come on.
I will blow a dude for a sandwich at this point.
Now, is this a foot long or a 6-inch sandwich? That
You're
is
so poor. You're so poor.
I'll take what I can get, man.
Now, honestly, I think it's not so bad because I went after all the lesbian achievements.
Well, that's different.
One thing that I always, it's always such a like, you know, there's never any like real, that's what, not to get on another entire debate, but like anytime you see sexuality in games, it's never, it's always like, it's cheesy and fake and phony. You know what I mean? And like, you know, we're kind of laughing and joking around, but it's not like, oh, you're, what am I trying to say? Like, you're not going to learn anything about real sexual experiences from any story in any video game, I don't think. I mean, I think that there could be like good examples of sexuality in storytelling you could cite, but I don't think there are any in the gaming industry.
I think the only useful thing I learned is that you can go in Fable 2, you know, taught me that I need to go buy rubbers, and that it also taught me that they're below the health potions in the drugstore,
as they should be. All right, well, guys, I guess that about wraps it up for this week of the Best Damn Podcast Ever. What do you think about that?
It was a good show.
If you got any feedback for us, it's feedback at bestdamnpodcastever.com. Or if you got any questions, you can send those in for BDPE. Also called Listener Line 845-BATTLE-9. Points, bonus points for impersonating other listeners. This is, I like this trend. Insulting the other, because we only got like, only six of you listen out there. I'll tell you, I'm going to get the stats installed next week, and it's going to be like, it's going to individually list the names. Pseudo Sushi, TK, Anthony.
You know what we should do? We should do the old Something Awful forum. we let you for like $1 write something else. Write something on someone else's profile page, and then they have to pay $2 to take it off.
Ooh.
And that's like how we monetize.
Ooh, what if we had like fan-based like... like shout outs. Like you pay like $10 and then I get to say, this is from Anthony from Alabama to TK. Fuck you, ass lick. Thanks a lot. Anyway, back to the show now.
We do that anyway for free.
Gotta monetize. Monetize. All right, well, I think that about does it. You guys got anything else?
That's about it.
All right, from Officer of the Best Damn Podcast Ever, I'm Blake Buck.
I'm William Miller.
I'm Justin Fick.
And we'll see you next time.